Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike 2099, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slaggy McWaggy 2.
Actually, it's new Pokemon Slag. Thank you very much.
Welcome once again, each and every one of our lovely and beautiful listener, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
And also with us in studio is our Pokemon correspondent, Sulker.
Hi!
You may recall Sulker from our old shared show, Same Type Attack Bonus Podcast, or Stabcast for short, as well as from episode 187, Episode Burmy, which was about recent developments in the Pokemon meta series. Please say hello, Sulker.
Let's get this place humid!
Today is May 24th, 2026, and this is the GameBuoy Podcast, episode 193. We all live in a Pokemon world. Pokemon Pokobia, Side B. As this is a direct follow-up to episode 193, Side A, we can skip much of the usual preamble, and I'll cut right to the chase. This week, we're discussing Pokopia, our experiences with the game, our thoughts on the story, and our hopes for the future. Also, our Pokemon husbands. We've also brought Sulker on this week to help us cover this topic, as he's beautiful, wonderful, and an incredibly invaluable behind-the-scenes support of the show, as well as, of course, the former co-host of our former sister show about Pokemon, the Same Type Attack Bonus Podcast, so we figured it would be useful to get some additional outside perspective and insight from him as our recently appointed Pokemon correspondent.
I think you mean Pokespondent, and he looks like a Linda Evangelista.
It's true. But before we get there, Sulker, why don't you tell our lovely and beautiful listeners a little bit about your recent experiences with the Pokemon series since that last episode you were on? Our listener has heard Slaggy and I speak on our experiences with those recent releases, the Nintendo Switch eShop release of Fire Red Leaf Green, as well as the Switch release of Pokemon Champions. Have you enjoyed these releases? Can you tell us a bit about what your time with these recent Pokemon titles has looked like?
This first part of the year has felt like a gift from Nintendo / the Pokemon Company. Things have been super bleak out there, kids, but thankfully there's been a heavy amount of Pokemon to disassociate into. Starting with Leaf Green, I did get back into enjoying travels through the Kanto region again, though I did not finish it before Pokopia came out, and I think I still have like 3 badges to go and get before thinking about finishing out the game. Talking about it reminds me that I need to get back on that grind, so you might notice me on that in a minute after this. I've had some fun with Pokemon Champions, though I've put in like less than 10 hours so far, so it's fun to pop into, get a rental Pokemon going, and just jump into the ranked fights. I love the Mega Evolution is a part of it as the forefront of the game's return, and look forward to seeing what other twists they unleash upon us as the seasons continue.
Excellent, excellent. All right, well then, with that having been said, I think I'd like to transition us a little more directly into the discussion. We'll sort of be approaching this as 3 pillars. And so we're going to start by discussing the gameplay, then we'll move on to discussing the story, and then we'll wrap up by speculating on sort of what's next for this sub-series. To that end, in advance of its release, I don't really recall any of us having had very strong anticipation for this game. We will obviously talk about what the game actually is, but I think it would be nice to sort of level set by starting with what you had been expecting of Pokopia since it was announced last September. And Sulker, I'd like you to start here.
I remember being outright dismissive of the title based on my first impressions from the trailer and the direct. So this morning I went back to watch it again, and for the life of me, I can't really recall why I felt the way I did. I presume I had issues with it not being a battle game nor a capture game, and of course I realize it's not a capture game, you know? But based on my initial impressions, I don't think that I was interested in playing the game. It seemed like maybe it was just some kind of weird Minecraft reskin to me. It wasn't until the Treehouse live event where they played Pokopia that I got really excited and invested in the title.
Yeah, you know, like, I think that's a really interesting point because they really kind of kept their Pokemon cards pretty close to their chest until we got that Nintendo Treehouse preview. And I think that really kind of showed us, oh, that's what the game is truly about, which I think was a smart move. But also, I kind of don't know why they didn't kind of trickle out information sooner. Like, I was going to already definitely pick it up. I love cozy games. You know, I was honestly expecting it to basically be Pokemon Animal Crossing X Harvest Moon, which, you know, that would have been fine. It would have been cute. But I think it took a lot of people by surprise. And what we ended up getting was better. And I think that obviously Nintendo didn't even expect how much it was going to appeal to people. Like, they were about to just be like, oh, we're not going to really promote this. Oh, here's a treehouse. Oh, wait, people like this.
Right. And it's so funny because, you know, as we all know now, you know, Pokopia is a Minecraft clone. It is an Animal Crossing clone, but it really is also so much more than that, right? For me, the unexpected delight in the gameplay really actually turned out to be the somewhat controversial design choice of removing combat from the setting altogether. For me, this really impacted sort of the entire narrative and fiction, really allowing it to sort of breathe, you know, because it didn't feel like the entire structure of the game was nailed down to setting up various fights or whatever. Instead, the story and the narrative and even just the basic gameplay approach is a lot more focused around like how various Pokemon act and like having to anticipate their wants and needs. And it really, for me, really allowed for the various Pokemon personalities to shine through. We will come back to Pokemon personalities, but I'd first like to ask both of you, what mechanics really stood out for you, as well as, you know, maybe highlighted the Pokemon setting in ways that were new and or interesting for you? And we will start with Solker again, but Slaggy, I will get to you to start relatively soon.
Three things that I really love from a gameplay perspective. Obviously, the transformations themselves deserve a focus since they're at the core of the game. The standouts for me are Rollout and Rock Smash as a combo for mining quickly when exploring and gathering Pokemon metal veins or Pokemetal veins being smashed to bits are fun. And if you know you're not in danger of like smashing any of your builds, it's a great means for transit. Glide, because you get to start traveling great distances from above where you can view for resources and sparkles. Magnetrise got so much use in the post game as a way to make large builds. And while being PP intensive, it was a game changer for how you continue on through that game.
I love Magnetrise so much, but I'm so glad it doesn't unlock until after the post game, because it really does kind of break a lot of the building as a game mechanic, but it also sort of unlocks building as like a whole different mode unto itself almost.
Yeah, and so I built some of the bigger structures on the Cloud Island that we all played on together.
Indeed.
Secondly, the entire cooking system was just a delight, discovering new recipes, increasing the power of our moves, and being able to give food to the Pokemon based on their favorite flavors. I also enjoyed the ease with which you could set up a kitchen and various cooking implements throughout a given playthrough, thinking about like specifically on Cloud Islands, you know. And how could I almost forget the interactions with Pokemon joining you in cooking, the way it changes, the way the cook is, or the food is changed, or like with Chef Dente giving you a 50% chance to double your food generated. So that's kind of a whole thing into and of itself. And then thirdly, and lastly, I think for this particular discussion, the environment and friendship system. While I was chasing, maxing out the environments for each area, I found it impossibly fun to complete the daily tasks for each Pokemon, like making the changes to their home, giving them foods that they like, or similar other requests. Adding buildings and changing the habitats to increase the overall happiness levels of Pokemons in the zones. I could go on all day, but those are my favorite from the game, and I want more.
And then Slaggy, what about you? What were you into? What did you think?
Yeah, there's so much to love in this game. I think Sulker really made a good point about the different moves. I like that each area, as you progress through the game, kind of introduced different features and different moves. Like, you know, starting in Withered Wasteland, you got the basic moves and kind of just introducing you to the core mechanics. And then you get other moves in the other areas. And then, like, you know, you go to Rocky Ridges, you get the minecarts, and you go to Bleak Beach, and you get the electricity and the lift platforms and the sparkling skylands. I like that each area kind of had its own bigger goal to accomplish beyond just restoring the Pokemon Center or, you know, cleaning up the environment. I thought that was really a fun way to kind of move the story forward. But I also liked that it was pretty open world. Like, when you got to a new zone, it didn't just railroad you into, like, oh, let's not go there yet. Like, Professor Tangrowth didn't, like, prevent you from going and just wandering around. And there were a lot of things that I kind of broke sequence for, honestly. Like, and then it would come up in the main story. It's like, oh, you need to do this. I'm like, oh, you mean that thing I already did accidentally? So I thought that was really cool. I don't know if I would say emergent gameplay, but I guess kind of emergent gameplay that I was able to, you know, kind of figure things out. And it was almost like, you know, puzzle elements. And then finding, like, oh, that's what the game wanted me to do anyway. You know, I think for me, like, as far as building the different structures and houses, like, I loved that there were so many different types of pre-built buildings that you could choose from. I'm someone who, when I play games like Roller Coaster Tycoon or Planet Coaster, like, I actually tend to prefer the pre-built rides and stuff rather than, like, you know, build my own coaster. I've never, it's really been a strength of mine. So, like, for me, that was really great for, especially in the base game, to have those buildings to kind of build my town around those. It really wasn't until I started doing my Cloud Island that I actually started getting more into custom builds and seeing all the amazing things that you were both making. And I haven't even scratched the surface yet, but the potential, like, is literally unlimited for, like, what you can make. And as far as, like, you know, the pre-builds, I think that is cool that if there's people who building custom structures, that doesn't appeal to them. Like, literally, you can play this game without ever making your own build. I mean, you do have to, like, patch up the fountain, right? But, like, that doesn't count. So I think just the fact that there are so many different things to do, and, like, people can really play the game the way they want. Like, if you don't really care about making your house cute, you don't have to. If you want to make the wildest structures, you can do that. I love it.
Absolutely.
There's room for everybody, I guess.
So then I'll move on then to the next talking point, which is, for me, I have to be honest, this game is mechanically already kind of a 10 out of 10. Well, I can think of some things I might like for them to add, and we will get to that later. I wouldn't necessarily change much of what's on offer within this game, but I wanted to ask both of you if there is anything that you would like the chance to change within this game. For me, for example, the difficulty was pretty well designed. The habitats and how they are rolled out / introduced through the story is well considered and works well as a soft tutorial for the online Cloud Islands, sort of in line with what Slaggy was saying about the gameplay sort of escalating as you get more moves from zone to zone. I even felt like the rail and electricity systems were both far more deep and detailed than what I think most of us were expecting from the pre-release materials. So, I mean, already the game is so much more than we were anticipating, right? And what is here is already so well crafted. I guess if I had to, like, come up with something I had to nitpick, I would like it if it was easier to get new recipes in Endgame without utilizing exploits. If I had to stretch, maybe the tech stack could have been optimized a little more so that more than, you know, 20 Pokemon can be awake at any given time. Obviously, I think that's more of an artifact of the time window when this was developed between the Switch 1 and Switch 2 changeover. But anyways, all of that done and said, is there anything either of you would like to change within this game? And this time, Slaggy, I'd like you to start.
Yeah, you know, you really kind of nailed it. I feel like it's already a 10 out of 10 game. I think something that would be kind of cool, but not necessary. I would love if there was a way to upload blueprints of like the custom builds that you do and share them with your friends. Like, I don't think that taking away being able to free build, obviously, I don't think everything should be pre-built. Like, that defeats half the purpose of the game, I think. You know, but again, some people may not want to do that. The reason I want this is, like, you know, I've seen some of the, like, multi-level buildings that y'all have made. I've seen the people online making, like, Taco Bell. And, like, I am still kind of getting my feet wet with custom builds and stuff and being able to, like, take a vision and build it out. So, like, I would love if I could go on to the Pokemon Center's PC and be, like, almost in the way that Animal Crossing has their custom designs, you know, that people make all the different things and you can go on and browse them. I would love to be like, oh, you know, I really want to put a Taco Bell on my beach and make Taco Bell Beach and have Executor work there or whatever. Like, I don't know. But I think just because, like, you know, so many people have so many cool ideas and I would love to implement some of that. Shiny Pokemon would be cute. I do think that, you know, like, furniture and wallpapers and stuff as they are in the game is, it's cute, it's workable, but I feel like Animal Crossing New Horizons really has kind of spoiled me for how easy it is to place furniture and wallpaper and stuff. One thing that was frustrating is, like, accidentally picking up an item or something, and then it completely unhouses a Pokemon, and they're like, oh, where'd my home go? And it, like, the way that I engage with games like this, I felt very guilty every time that happened. So, you know, maybe they could find a way to, like, oh, I'm going to lock this area so that I can't change it. And then you have to, like, unlock it before you want to do something. Like, it would be, like, literally, like, I was picking crops from my farm. And then, oops, I accidentally picked up an item that, you know, ruined their environment. And then my only other nitpick is that one time in Bleak Beach, I was, you know, inhaling the water from the ocean and then got all uneven and it really messed me up for an afternoon. I was like, oh, like, I don't want to keep playing this game. Like, I kind of had a hissy fit. You both probably remember that. And so I ended up having to look on YouTube and I was like, oh, okay. So I feel like that was the one mechanic with the water and the water levels that, like, didn't quite. It wasn't quite, like, evident to me at first, so...
Yeah, I do think more robust water editing tools would have been nice.
And also, really quickly, like, if you have a flood and trying to slurp up all the water again, there were times where, like, oh, I really want to quickly hydrate all of my dry grass. But then it's like, ooh, girl, you got to go slurp up all that water, girl. It takes a while, so, yeah.
All right, well, Sulker, what about you?
Look, I played about 200 hours of this game, and I loved playing through it. And for me, it's a 10 out of 10. However, there is one thing, and only one thing, I would change about this game. Magnet Rise Transformation. Why does it need a prompt to exit out of? It makes switching in and out of the form cumbersome and a little bit annoying. That's it. That's what grinds my gears about the game mechanically. Otherwise, oh God, perfection.
Right. That's such a good point.
No, I'm 100 with you. In fact, I'll give you one too. How come Magnet Rise doesn't have a 3x3 remove function when it has a 3x3 build function?
Yeah, sure.
Ooh.
And Sulker, you said grind my gears, but don't you mean grinds my clink clinks? Isn't that what it's called? A clink clink? The gear Pokemon?
I think that's a question between you and Jesus.
See, I thought you were going to make a joke about the little poke gears that you get from Tinkaton.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, anyway. I had to search it. It was Clink Clang and then Clink Clang, the gear Pokemon. They're Gen 5. You know, but it is kind of like a gray area for me.
So we mentioned earlier the heavyweights of the genre, as the Minecraft and Animal Crossing DNA are both clearly pretty present here. But we'd be remiss to wrap up this gameplay portion of discussion without also taking a look at how Dragon Quest Builders 1 and 2 are basically progenitors to this game. Dragon Quest Builders 2 in particular shares a lot in common with Pocopia. And yet something about Pocopia has that secret sauce that DQB 1 and 2 seem to have lacked for many gamers, particularly Westernly. Did either of you have any insight as to the design evolution of Dragon Quest Builders into Pocopia, and or were there any other specific design influences on Pocopia that you wanted to call out? Solker?
So I didn't play any of the Dragon Quest Builder series. However, I have played a fair bit of Minecraft and Animal Crossing. I mean this as relative to my own gaming experiences, not to those who have dedicated thousands of hours to those series. But you can see their influences directly in this game. There are various sounds and musical cues that to my ear felt like they were born directly from Animal Crossing. And I mean, everything's made of blocks. You don't get really more Minecraft coded than blocks, do you? Which is great, because I think there's the Pocopia community ended up looking to Minecraft for inspiration on builds, which has led to some relatively cool builds that I've seen around on the subreddit. The building, the Pokemon friendships, and the general vibes all feel like direct evolutions on Minecraft and Animal Crossing.
And then you, Slaggy.
Yeah, and I love that because I don't have the Minecraft perspective that I know you guys do. And obviously Animal Crossing, like, that's my jam. I really was surprised how little Animal Crossing DNA there really was in this game, which I think is good. I think if it was basically just Animal Crossing with Pokemon, I don't think it would have had the appeal it did. As far as Dragon Quest Builders, I did end up playing a little bit of Dragon Quest Builders 2, but that actually was not until I had started Pocopia, and I was like, oh, I'm kind of interested to see the DNA. And it was very interesting to be like, oh, okay, yeah, like, literally, that's like Pocopia. I honestly, you kind of alluded to this earlier, Captain Spike, I think Pocopia is a stronger game for not having combat in it. Like, if I wanted Pokemon combat, I would just go play one of the mainline Pokemon RPGs, you know? I didn't get too deep into Builders 2, so I don't know how the gameplay kind of evolved as it went through it, but just kind of seeing the presentation of it, and I kind of get the impression that there were a lot of quality of life changes and polish when it evolved into Pokemon Pocopia. And, you know, I think having the Pokemon franchise to pull from, like, it's so universally loved. I know that Dragon Quest is very popular as well. But for me, for example, Dragon Quest never has really clicked for me, despite multiple times trying. Although I did like the original Dragon Quest Monsters game. Maybe Square Enix should do Dragon Quest Monster Builders. But anyway, back to Pocopia. I think it does a really lovely job taking all of its influences and, you know, kind of marrying those building aspects from Minecraft and Dragon Quest Builders. And then, like, you know, from Animal Crossing, it kind of has those charming critter personalities and the cozy town sim elements. It just really hit the sweet spot for me. I'm personally not the biggest fan of, like, survival elements. Like, I'm glad that, you know, you could feed your Pokemon, but they weren't like, oh, I'm hungry, I'm gonna die if you don't feed me. So for me, this was everything I needed from the game.
Excellent, excellent. And yeah, I do understand what you mean. While I enjoy managing a hunger meter in a lot of these games, it probably wouldn't be fun if you had to spend most of the game time running around feeding everybody. And by the time the people you were feeding at last, the first people you fed were probably getting hungry again, like a freaking Tamagotchi.
Pip-Up's like, where's my berries?
All right. Well, with all of that having been said, let's transition with our first sidebar. This one is affectionately called Pokemon Boyfriends. I'd like to talk here about some of the Pokemon social dynamics that have come up, either unexpectedly or otherwise. I'll start here by noting that before this game, I could kind of give or take Vespiquen, but I actually ended up setting her as my cabin mate in Withered Wasteland, the first area of the game, so that I could always easily find her for her honey trade-in options for free furniture, which often come with exclusive patterns that you can only get from trading with her. And an interesting knock-on effect is that over time, I found that I really grew to like her as a Pokemon due to her presence and seeing her every time I'd warp back to that area. So, like, now I find myself pretty fond of her.
Yes, Quinn.
I'd like to hear from each of you about your Pokemon boyfriends stories, including Slaggy. I think you're the one that actually named the Pokemon boyfriends trope with one of your pairings. But we'll get to that. Slaggy or Sulker, let's go first with you.
Sure. I mean, in terms of boyfriends, probably Heracross and Pinsir, just because I think they're at odds with each other all the time.
Oh, I see it.
But amusingly, I really came to love all of the Pokemon that generated things that I was in constant need of. The recycling Pokemon, in particular, were ones that I came to rely on. Bedlam, Metang, Trubbish, and Garbodor to make iron, or iron ore, I should say. And the latter two just generating recycling materials in general to boot. I enjoyed that my fave, Growlithe, could be used to generate bricks from clay. All of the fossil Pokemon in my main game were in one section, so they sort of had like a little stone alleyway where I would just gather tons of stone every day. I also got a kick out of making homes for Pokemon that I like to see live together, like my Eevee house. It's so weird and quirky that I'd like really think a family of Eeveelutions would like to live in that space.
You know, I actually did a very similar thing for my Eevee and my Eeveelutions, so I had a very similar idea. I love that, honestly, and, like, I really got into the idea of sort of theming some of the little domiciles as, like, oh, this is themed for this group of Pokemon to live here, and just being cute about it.
Yeah, no, that was definitely the vibe, just having fun with it and building little habitats for them all.
Indeed. And then, Slaggy, your response.
Yeah, I love, Sulker, I love that you mentioned Heracross and Pinsir, because something that I love about this game and the Pokemon personalities is really there's no drama aside from the two of them fighting with each other. And I have seen people online have them live together like they're tsundere boyfriends. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense, honestly.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people, well, not a lot, but I've definitely seen people do that. Captain Spike, I actually had a very similar experience to you, the way that you talked about how you had, I was a little distracted because you were talking about Vespa Queen bringing you the trade, Hanny. No, but in all seriousness, just about, you know, being able to appreciate Pokemon that I may have overlooked. Part of the thing with the Pokemon RPGs is that, you know, at least for me, I'm like, oh, I have certain types I want represented on my team, or like, oh, you know, that's a cool Pokemon, but they don't really have a good stats or whatever. And, you know, like out of the 1,000 plus Pokemon that are currently in the franchise, with more on the way, like there are, I'm sure, literally hundreds that I have never used on my team and like literally just captured them and put them in a box. I'm guessing that's the same for most folks out there. But taking away the combat and the strategy really gave the Pokemon themselves opportunities to shine. And I really loved discovering their personalities. Like, you know, when you met Pikachu, he was very like kind of prim and proper, but then you meet some other Pokemon, they're like, yo, it's like just so funny to see the different personalities and like how that kind of just endeared them to me. In a mainline Pokemon game, I may not have really paid certain Pokemon much mind. Talking specifically in looking at Pokemon boyfriends, I don't know if I actually coined Pokemon boyfriends. I feel like other people have talked about that.
Well,
but
no,
at least
I should probably state I coined the term Pokemon boyfriends to describe the living situation set up.
Do you have a problem with my living situation? It's 2026.
Not even a little bit, or I wouldn't have named a segment after it.
I'm like, do you have an issue with same-sex households as you're literally recording with your husband? That being said, my main Pokemon boyfriend, because we're a little pokey polyamorous here, is definitely Machoke. Let's just say that I already found his design fairly appealing in the mainline games anyway. But I just really love that in this game, he's just like an adorable himbo boyfriend. Like, I just found him so cute. I had him in the base game. I just call it the base game. You know, I had him move into Rocky Ridges with me. And then when I got a Machoke on the Cloud Island, definitely had him move in with me as well. Like, girl, y'all have seen the way that, like, he will pose. Like, draw me, like, one of your French girls pose.
Machoke me, daddy.
Right? Like, I feel like they knew exactly what they were doing. And, like, I've literally seen, like, people on social media and, like, YouTube being like, oh, Machoke.
Satan has a hold of your soul.
Yes. But for me, the biggest surprise, and I wasn't expecting, was Scyther. You know, I definitely use Scyther in some of the Pokemon games. But Scyther himself, I never really bothered to put on my team. I was like, oh, he's cool. But like something about his personality just was so endearing. I just found him really charming. And I'm just like, oh, you're super adorable. And so I had him, like, that was really early on in Withered Wasteland. Kind of what Sulker was saying, you know, like, he was able to chop the logs into lumber for me. So I was like, oh, you're so helpful, bae. And so I had him move in with me in Withered Wasteland. He was my first roommate. And then on the Cloud Island, also had him move in with me and Machoke. So I'm just waiting now to find the items I need to unlock Toxtricity, and I think that will complete my Poke Polycule, but you never know. There's always room for more.
Ah! Well, we have a guitar
set. Sorry, I'm choking on water.
We have a Toxtricity set up on the Cloud Island, if you ever want to come take a picture of it so that you can get that polycule going. Polycule cycling.
Yeah, I need my rocker boyfriend.
And I have to say, Scyther was a big one for me too, where I don't normally think a whole lot about Scyther, but I really came to rely upon him for cutting my wood my logs into the wood, and really became very charmed and attached to him by the end.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure you like Scyther taking care of that wood.
All right. Well, we are now far enough from release of Pokopia, an unintended benefit of our extended planning process for this episode, that we can now openly acknowledge this game's big lore bomb, no potential wordplay intended, which is that Pokopia takes place in Kanto of the Pokemon Red, Blue, Green era, but in a post-apocalyptic future, full of text logs describing a late/post-capitalistic society that has rendered their home planet uninhabitable, and the Pokemon the humans left behind on their planet. Many of us, myself included, found this story-heavy approach to be a pleasant surprise, which is a surprising thing to say about a story that is also fairly heavy in its themes. I'd like to ask, what are your sort of big takeaways from the story on this one? Your big responses? And Slaggy, I'd like to start with you.
Yeah, you know, I was not expecting a cautionary tale from Pokemon Pokopia, but, you know, since we're living in late-stage capitalism and climate change is threatening the very existence of humankind, I thought this was a very timely story to be telling, and pretty daring, honestly, like, for a game that's at a surface, like, oh, it's cute, it's Pokemon, you're giving them places to live. You know, not that Pokemon shied away from some pretty mature themes, like X and Y, I feel like, had a pretty mature story in particular, and, you know, I feel like a lot of times the Pokemon games are dismissed as children's games, which they are everyone games, in my opinion. But there's something about that juxtaposition of that cute Pokemon aesthetic with the post-apocalyptic theme that just, like, brought it to a whole other level. I thought it was very compelling. And like you said, I wanted to go find all the text logs and then, you know, the The Ed Dean, which I believe Salker's going to touch on a little bit, just was a really kind of tender way to kind of wrap up the main story. So, yeah, I was gagged, honestly.
Honestly, I just got a kick out of the whole thing. I mean, I also got a little of the sads because of the parallels to our reality. Finding the various notes throughout the game as it progressed by giving us hints of what was happening in the background was a fun way to grab the imagination and keep the intrigue going just beyond the fun of meeting new Pokies and building new homes and stuff. It's a dark world that they've set up, but I love the way that they set it up as a story of generating hope, sort of relying on nature to heal itself by removing humanity from the equation for a while, and a message of love crossing all of time and space.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to add, both of you noted how the story gets pretty dark. I actually do know at least one person. I know you know them too, but I can also think of a couple of other people from my online social circles who were actually not able to finish the game because the story was so heavy, which I think is really interesting from a Pokemon game and was probably not what those users were expecting in a negative way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could totally see that, and I respect that. You know, something that you mentioned about, like, that it takes place in Kanto, like, realizing that was so cool. It was when I went to Bleak Beach and saw the SSN, I was like, OMG, what? Like, that's when it clicked for me. And then that, like, totally gave me a whole new level of appreciation that I carried forward with the rest of the game. And that made me, like, want to try to find other things that were, like, little Easter eggs.
Yeah, absolutely. I had already had a couple of suppositions and theories based on some of the text logs and some of the settings, but likewise, once it was SSN, clearly it was just such an oh shit moment. And initially, yeah, we weren't really going to talk too much about that in this episode, but since we've got spaced out so long from the release, it does feel safe now to talk about. And it's just such a cool twist, and the way they execute it is really quite surprising. To that degree, and with the understanding that I think we're all expecting some kind of extension yet, I'd like to move on and ask you if there are any threads left hanging or scenarios that the game did not cover, but which were, you know, sort of implied by the setting slash story and which you'd like to see resolved. Sort of in line with what we were just saying about SSN, I personally would have liked to have seen more iconic locations from the Gen 1 and maybe even Gen 2 games identified specifically. I understand that the ambiguity is half the fun initially, and as we were just saying, it was such a jaw-dropping moment to have that twist. But I think the concept would go even harder if in the back half of the game we had seen even more well-known slash, you know, kind of landmarks we were sentimental about in ruins, you know? What about you guys? And Sulker, let's start with you.
Something I felt they could have done more of and should do of if they continue to add content is building back some of those iconic landmarks from the game. I would really love to rebuild the Pokemon Tower from Lavender Town, for instance, which, again, we know I attempted on the Cloud Island, but also maybe got a little too ambitious.
Earl, attempted? You turned it, Mama.
Well, we on the Cloud Island were running into some building limits in terms of having too many like power generating tiles out and stuff. So while we still love the game and love the Cloud Island and our projects on it, it also does feel slightly stifling to run into roadblocks like that, which is why for me, I was talking a little bit about like tech stack concerns and stuff.
Yeah,
I was also going to hit the skybox limit, which is what I got too ambitious on, but thank you. I'd also like to see a message from humanity return to Pokopia. I don't think a return of humans would really vibe with the way the game is presently set up for, but I think it would be cute to, like, a cute way for them to end an X-Pack.
Aw.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you both said. Like I said, once you see the SSN, and then when I went back and found the Pewter Museum, I was like, oh, I see what they're doing. And, you know, I think the game was great as it is. I wanted more areas, but I don't feel like I was ripped off. But I would have been happy having the campaign be twice as long with twice the amount of areas. Like, it wouldn't have felt like a drag to get to, just because I really enjoyed that. Similarly to what you said, Sulker, I would love to have seen Lavender Town and exploring the ruins of the Pokemon Tower and just kind of seeing how they would do that. I feel like it would have been a very, like, ooh, kind of spooky area and very haunting. And although I almost feel like with the post-apocalyptic setting, that almost might have gotten a little too dark. But still, love Lavender Town. I'm obviously a huge fan of Gen 2. I still have a soft spot for it. So whether in an expansion or a future game, I would love to see Johto. Especially Bellsprout Tower, because I guess I really like Pokemon Towers. I just have very fond memories of Bellsprout Tower. So I would love to explore it. But, you know, I also, you know, don't expect them to have all 1,000 plus Pokemon, but got a friend them all. Like, I want all the cuties and weirdos to have a home, TBH.
Well, I don't entirely agree, but I see what you're saying. Well, actually, I do agree. And I don't see why we shouldn't hope for all 1,000 plus. With that said, I'd like to transition us toward the conclusion of our discussion. We do have, of course, one more pillar to discuss, and that is the future. In this context, I've sort of broken down three questions I want to ask you both that I think outline sort of our hopes slash expectations for the future of this sub-series to the Pokemon meta franchise. To start, I'd like to ask if there are any gameplay features, big or small, that you'd like to see expanded upon in a theoretical Pokopia 2 or even Pokopia DLC. I know that in some of the ways that I would like for a continuation of Pokopia to be like an all new game, you know, built on a tighter tech stack, built designed for Switch 2. But at the same time, I wouldn't really mind if the game we already had just stayed evergreen, just got expanded throughout the generation. I guess to that end, I will cite two major features I'd like to see, one which is kind of DLC scaled and one which is kind of new game scaled. In a DLC, I would really like to see the game we already have get expanded to add new zones. This really kind of feels like a given already, but I'd specifically really like for there to be an ice zone in the game. It feels so weird to me how there actually are ice cubes, LOL, present in the game as it exists right now. But at the same time, I know it's so rare in the game that some people play their entire games without running into it outside of the ice cubes that make up the ice legendary birds temple in the Pallet Town. So it just feels really weird. To me, it feels like there's already like some ice ideas in the game, therefore, right? We already have some ice Pokemon, just not too many. So I think it would be really, I don't want to say easy because nothing's easy exactly, but it seems manageable to expand what we have presently with an ice-themed island and a new set of ice-themed Pokemon. As far as a sequel, I'd really like to see more robust railway and electrical grid management systems. I really like how approachable everything is right now. I think everything is at the appropriate complexity level presently, but in the future, I would really love to see them dig deeper and go even more complex. You guys, what are your mechanical hopes for? Sulker?
The weird way that they hit ice in a couple of locations was moderately frustrating. I do agree with that. I'm really hoping for an inclusion of like an ice cavern biome that opens up in a hypothetical X-Pack. I'd like to see it go into a more X-Pack or expansion-based direction rather than subsequent games. Because, you know, they do have so much meat left on the bone. We got 300 Pokemon out of 1,000 total Pokemon right now. And as Slaggy pointed out, more are coming. Someone's favorite Pokemon has not yet been found in Pokopia, and they should get a chance to find them. I think if they did like another 150 per game, they'd be able to get like, what, 6 X-Packs in? Plus then the different regions. you know, can have enough like different looks and biomes and to create more more cubes for them to build, and therefore more recipes for them to build, and more items for us to find and therefore build. Yeah, I think that they just need to do X-packs of every region. That's really what I want.
Slaggy?
Yeah, you both covered it pretty well. I think there are definitely biomes that weren't really represented. Like, I'd love to see, like, jungle areas, and, like, I don't feel like we really got a proper desert areas. As far as the ice thing, like, I get that Kanto didn't really have, like, snowy areas that some of the other games did, but there was the Seafoam Islands. Like, come on, let's have a Seafoam Islands. You know, as far as, like, a DLC or expansion pack approach, like, I expect that we're gonna get some more Kanto and maybe Johto zones, since they're, you know, they're connected to each other in the Pokemon world. As far as a theoretical sequel, I would love what you were saying, Captain Spike, about them getting really ambitious and kind of really building on the infrastructure. Like, I don't think they need to quite get on a SimCity or City Skylines level, but, you know, pushing it a little further, and maybe even with some of, like, the farming, just, like, you know, not to the point where it's, like, overwhelming. Like, my experience with Stardew Valley, for example, was there was so much to do that I kind of felt overwhelmed and, like, having that whole day-night cycle. So I don't want them to, like, do anything that would kind of break the coziness of the game. But I think a lot of us probably really enjoyed the infrastructure of making rail systems and making electricity systems. And, like, you know, we were talking on our Designing Women Housing and Gaming episode about how we'd like to see Animal Crossing kind of play with some of those features as well. Like, you know, I know that may not be for everyone, but for, like, town games and theme park games, like, it's almost like civil engineering aspects, and I really love those. So, yeah, I would really love to see that and see what else they could do with those. Maybe things with the roads and stuff. I don't know.
So wait, to be clear, did you do any of the, like the day and night aspect stuff in Pokopia? Because there were Pokemon that you could only capture at night. So I'm just curious if you did that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just meant in terms of something like Stardew Valley when, you know, you only had so many hours in the day and it's, like, calendar-based. Like those.
Everybody's going to go to sleep at such and such time, so you can't get stuff done after that.
Yeah, so I think, like, those sorts of restrictions for day and night.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but no, I love that. That, like, you know, similar to the Pokemon games, where, like, oh, that Pokemon's only found at night. So, like, those sorts of things are really cool. And, you know, I think even, like, playing with weather a little more could be really fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well,
and to that end, I actually had thought they were going to do more with weather after we have to influence that first zone to be humid.
Exactly.
All right. Well, then with our gameplay expansion ideas sort of in place, I want to ask you both about the setting / scenario. I'd personally really like to see Gen 2 filled out. I was really expecting Pokopia to be centered around the legends and rosters of Gens 1 and 2. And for the most part, it is. But the ways in which the Gen 2 roster shows its gaps is interesting. I assume those holes are going to get filled.
Whoa. Speaking of Pokemon boyfriends.
In a bigger sequel sense.
Dig.
I noted. Oh. It is my hope that eventually all 1,000 plus Pokemon, including, you know, the ones that are still to come, do get the Pokopia treatment. And for all of the major settings of every region to be revisited in post-apocalyptic glory. For each of you, are there specific setting / scenario ideas you'd like to see expanded? Slaggy?
Yeah, obviously Gen 2 for sure, like you said, and as I said before. For me, like, the idea that's really, like, exciting to me is, like, let's go beyond having minecarts. Let's have bullet trains and monorails. Like, we know that those already were kind of part of the Pokemon world. You know, there's a bullet train, so, like, I want my Pokemon to build, like, little monorails, please.
Well, yeah, we add regions, it's a really easy way to introduce new and more complicated mechanics.
Yeah, like, I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have a sequel set in Unova? And basically, you know that meme image of Utopia where it's got, like, the super sleek buildings and the grass and, like, the flying cars and the monorail? Like, imagine...
Society, if everybody started reading books again.
Right, society, if humans left and Pokemon took over. Like, literally yeah. that, mm-hmm. like... Which, you know, which is the future that we want, honestly. Being able to truly turn it into a Pokemon Utopia, I guess you could almost call that a Pokopia, right? I just think it'd be funny if Pokemons were able to transcend the limits of human technology. Basically, this is a long answer to say, I want Pokemon monorails, please. Pokemonorails! Oh my god. Also, I have two words. Alola Pokopia.
Oh shit, girl, you got it there. I would buy it at a high price.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see them do all of the generations justice. Even the upcoming Wind and Waves should get representation, like, especially during a period of time when they could do cross promotion hype. I'd like to see them add more of the event style Pokemon events like Sableye and the Hoppip event with Skiploom and Jumpluff included. But also the ability to get them on Cloud Islands.
Oh, yes.
Not sure how they would really, like, handle that, given the collectible time of it all. But I really do want to, like, collect them all with my friends. I'd, of course, love to see, like, new building materials and recipes added, because I'm getting tired of trying to find some new ones when I log in and just not having anything new at any of the Pokemarts I go to.
Yes. And, you know, I hadn't thought about it, but I really hope that they do a event to promote upcoming Wind/Waves games by having an in-game Pokopia event where maybe the three new starter babies can join our town.
Precisely so.
And how about Mr. Windy Chew and Mrs. Wavy Chew?
Ah, but honestly, yes. And I think that it's almost like a no-brainer. Use this to promote your upcoming games. So, with all of that having been said, following up on what I was saying a bit ago, that I'd like to see all of the Pokemon in all of the regions in the Pokopia era, which I think we've all kind of come to, that's a big idea. Even bigger is the idea that I think many of us would like there to be sort of some massively online components to the game. Many of us already feel that Cloud Islands scale fairly well, and I think the game could be designed around that in some fun communal ways, you know. For me, that's, I guess, what my ideal Pokopia sequel would kind of look like, is what we already have, but just scaled much larger and much more complex. But what about each of you? What does your ideal Pokopia sequel look like, sort of unrestrained by budget and scaling issues? And I mean, you know, if you do want to consider it, how unlikely or likely does the scope of what you're proposing sort of make it? Sulker?
For a true sequel, I'd like to see them include something of a survival aspect. Not that I'm really into breaking the coziness of the game, but I think if you're exhausting everything in DLC for the first game, there has to be a lure for the second game, right? So maybe it's the sort of thing where Pokemon start disappearing from their habitats, and the other Pokemon start asking you about them. Have you seen Piplup? Where did Charmander go? Then you find signs of buildings that you don't remember building. And then next, your friend appears again, but they start attacking the other Pokemon in your community. And that's when you see them for the first time. The return of the first trainers. A trainer named Turpentine, who is capturing Pokemon and starting the old traditions of using Pokemons as tools back up again. It's up to you to free your friends, the enslaved Pokopians, and find a way to make balance exist between Pokemon and humans in this new world.
Yes, I think someone found a new tabletop campaign to run, honestly. You know, that's a really interesting way to look at it. I wouldn't mind survival light aspects if it didn't break the cozy, as you said. For me, Captain Spike, I really tapped into what you had said about being a massively online game. You know, everyone's assuming that Pokemon Seeds is going to be an MMORPG in, like, kind of the classic sense. But with how successful Pokopia is, I almost wonder if Pokemon Seeds is going to be more of like a Pal World type game. Honestly, there's room for both, though. As far as beyond DLC, I think it's pretty likely that both from expansion packs and proper sequels that we are going to continue to see Pokopia continue in the way that Pokemon Legends has and will continue to do so. You know, I also, I'm kind of a little unsure of whether humans should come back. I really don't think in this Pokopia I could see it in a sequel or a spiritual sequel where it's a little bit of a combination of Pokopia and something like a Palia game. Like, regardless of what it ends up looking like, the limit does not exist answer is like, oh, every single Pokemon region is available in the game, right? Like, I'm tempted to say that that isn't really feasible as far as scaling the tech, but like, if you consider the fact that Final Fantasy 14 is getting a Switch 2 port, and that's a massive game, it may not be as impossible as we might think. And if we're just going to go all out and throw everything at the wall, let's just add Pokemon Snap elements into the sequel too. I love taking the pictures. So like, imagine if you could just straight up also play Pokemon Snap.
I do wish the photography in the game were a little more gamified, because I already was sort of playing Pokemon Snap. I would be sort of roaming around. I'd see the Pokemon acting cute and I'd be taking all kinds of pictures of them.
That's true. I did be watching you do that.
And I just really loved new Pokemon Snap. So let's bring it all together.
Excellent.
The ultimate cozy Pokemon game.
All right. That about wraps it up for us here today. I think it's safe to say we're all fans of Pokopia here. But to put a bow on this discussion of ours, what are each of your, ideally short, because I know how we can do here on Game Buoy, review of Pokopia? Sulker?
My favorite game of the year. Got me through some hard times and honestly rekindled some joy I'd lost for the series since not watching any of the anime in a long time. So 10 out of 10, 11 out of 9, 10 out of 4. It's all good. It's my fave.
Not too much water?
No, just enough water.
Good. Yeah, I would say game of the year contender. Absolutely delightful experience and hopefully the beginning of a thriving sub-series or evergreen platform for the Pokemon franchise.
Indeed.
Clock that on your Mr. Timer, honey.
All right. Thank you so much, Sulker, for coming through today. One last time, when and where can our listeners find you?
The Void, mostly. It's where I scream, and that's that. Oh. I'm on Blue Sky, sort of. Thank you for having me. Special correspondent signing off, except that I'm still here in studio. Not signing off.
And I just wanted to say, Captain Spike, thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to be on this show. I'm a really big fan of what you're doing here. If it's okay, can I give a shout out to a little indie gaming podcast I'm on? Would that be all right?
Girl.
So y'all may not have heard of it. It's called the Game Buoy Video Game Podcast. Your twice monthly
Game Buoy Video Game Podcast.
Your twice monthly
Game Buoy Video Game Podcast.
Your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. You can go find it over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org!
That is actually how I imagine GameBuoy, the Game Boy mascot of ours, to talk.
Eat a cartridge, bitch! Oh,
and with that, let's start our exit loot.
Oh, boy. So, our social links question of the week was, this week we're talking about Pokopia. What do you... Oh my god, sorry. I can't get over that. Wow. Game Buoy. Language, please. Our social links question of the week was, this week we're talking about Pokopia. What did you think of the game's surprising story? Did you enjoy the gameplay? What would you like to see for the future of this new sub-series? We got a response over on the Blue Sky, which is not dead, despite what some people may say. This was from longtime listener of the show, Mike Deft Ibarra, saying, I personally haven't played it. Too many games to play in so little time and money. But from what I've heard, been hearing from other people is that anyone who didn't like stuff like Stardew Valley, Minecraft, or even Animal Crossing got into Pokopia, or at least showed interest because it actually had a story. So I just hope they expand on the story, explore more regions, and just perfect what's already there. Well said.
Yeah. As noted in this discussion, the story really was a big draw for us in Pokopia, unexpectedly.
Indeed. And then we got a response over on the VOG Network Discord, a little bit exclusive. But, you know, if you're not part of the VOG Discord, you should be, unless you're a bad actor, in which case, please stay away. But I don't think any of those people would be listening to our show. We got a response from Prod Culture saying, I haven't been playing it this week. I got distracted by Forza Horizon 6. Sounds like a lot of people have, so very reasonable. Also, let's add some Tokyo drifting into or I guess we'd be more like Johto drifting, right?
Yeah.
Fast and the Furious Johto drift. All right, with that, we love your feedback. We love your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. You can find us over on Blue Sky at GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
At GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
We're on Mastodon at GameBuoy at MSTDN.games.
At GameBuoy at MSTDN.games.
And, you know, it's 2026. Everybody's doing the emails. And you can email us at GameBuoy.org at gmail.com with the .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G.
GameBuoy.org at gmail.com with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
And if you hadn't guessed, our home base is GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
With an actual dot.
With an actual dot.
And if there's anywhere else where GameBuoy should be seen or heard, although we are a podcast in the truest sense, we, you know, all these young folks who have podcasts and they're just YouTube videos, but really with, you know, independent voices, we champion that. So whether it's video or audio or both. Go you. But, you know, the podcasting landscape has changed a lot over the past few years. So please let us know if there's anywhere else you'd like us to go. And we would like you to go check out some Friends of Buoy.
If you're friends with Buoy, then you're friends with me. If you're down with Buoy, then you're down with me.
Woohoo!
As ever and always, I'd like to point you in the direction of OLR2DX, where every geek has a voice, our friends and inspirations. Please join us in looking forward to the new Orange Lounge Radio 2DX Odyssey. I'd also like to point you in the direction of Aftermath. In their own words, Aftermath is an independent worker-owned website about video games, other media, and internet culture. In my words, they're the audience-supported site that many of our faves have landed at. We cite them all the damn time, and we strongly encourage you to check them out. I'd also like you to check out The Game Mechanics, where they kick the tires and run diagnostics on tabletop experiences. Hosts Logan Jenkins and friend of the show Greg Leatherman have been playing games for decades and have designed several games themselves. Please check them out. I'd also like to point you in the direction of Walloping Web Snappers, a Spider-Man podcast. Doug and Derek dive into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made, from the swingin' 60s through the rockin' 90s to Spectacular, Ultimate, and beyond. Last, and certainly only least in terms of length, we have Neo Geo Go. Aaron and Andre take on the Neo Geo library chronologically and quickly. Slaggy, who would you like to shout out?
I would like to shout out to the Bobby Black Wolf Show, a weekly internet radio show and podcast discussing the latest news in gaming, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. Bobby is, of course, one of the co-founders of the Voice of Geeks Network, VOG Network for short, of which we are proud members and hope that we are not the embarrassing stepchildren in the VOG world. I'd like to shout out to friends of the show, Nintendo Pow Block, which is a podcast that dives into the week that was into the world of Nintendo. Longtime listener and friend of the show, Eddie V, is one of the hosts over there. Love what they do. Also, longtime friend of this show, Standard Issue Computing, is a Blue Sky account and a blog that covers retro and modern computer games, hardware, software, and history. A lot of times, some good Xbox 360 realness and, you know, just a lot of good times. I've been really enjoying watching how his content has evolved over the years, and always here for it, always support it. And one of my more recent favorites is Sasha's Retro Bytes on Blue Skies, which also has a associated blog as well, which you should check out. Sasha's Retro Bytes provides bites of vintage gaming including magazine scans and photographs. And the aforementioned blog is Scanline Artifacts, which can be found at scanlineartifacts.co.uk. I'd like to also shout out to Defunct Games, your daily source for modern video game reviews, exciting trivia, competitions, and old school magazine analysis. And last but certainly not least, I'd like to shout out to Thomas Game Docs on YouTube, where each video covers a different aspect of video game history, such as game development and sound design for beloved Nintendo franchises. And speaking of sound design for beloved Nintendo franchises, our wonderful theme music was done by the late, great Zelda Reorchestrated, which was a project that reorchestrated beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. Thankfully, the legend continues in the form of Zario's Second Quest. Go check them out and show your support at ZREOSQ.com. These are not sponsors. We aren't those types of girls, but we just encourage you to support the people who are doing great work out there that we are fans of. And that includes my hot robot boyfriend, Craig, who is our robotic recording engineer and has an evil twin named G-Arc. Without him, Game Buoy would not be possible in the modern era, literally. So check out Craig. And if you're nasty, you can check out G-Arc if you have disco recording needs.
Disco recording needs.
No, I said Discord recording needs.
Sure, Jan. In the coming days, we've been working on something initially for Mother's Day. And we're also looking forward to the various June news events coming up. Stay tuned for an exciting month. Please look forward
to
that.
Sorry,
Mommy. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
Stay safe.
Stay safe.
Stay strong.
Stay strong.
And wanna go where no one's been. Far beyond the crowd. Pokemon. Yeah.
Learn the way to take command. Use the power that's in my hand.
Oh, hey! We all live in a Pokemon world!
Pokemon.
Pokemon.
Should we count that off so we can do it in unison? 1, 2, 3. Pokemon. Oh, we didn't agree how we're gonna do it. We're gonna do Pokemon. We're gonna do Pokemon. I guess we did it. Bye.
Pokemon. Pokemon. Pokemon.
Pokemon.
Pokemon.
Pokemon.
Pokemon.
Pokemon.
Pokemon.
Pokemon.
Oh, hey kids, are you playing the Pokemon Poketopia? Are you winning yet? Good for you. I'll bring you some Rice Krispie Squares.
Pokemon.
Pokemon.
There we go. I can edit that one.
And I think that's us, Goose. I need to move this Sableye somewhere.
Now recording.
Ew, no, I don't want to enable Gemini on Google Sheets. Gross.
Well, that wasn't the response I was expecting, but I think I'll get a blooper out of it.
Hey, Craig.
I need to move this Sableye somewhere. Side B, it's like Side A, but different. Maybe a guest star. I need to move this Sableye somewhere.
It's pissing.
I need to move this Sableye somewhere.
Oh shit, I totally forgot I originally had planned to build a little podcasting studio and then have us go in it for the album art, but I didn't do that for Side A, so. Oh well.
That'd have been cute as shit, though.
I mean, we still could for B-Side.
I think I have all the things to make a podcasting studio now.
Well, that might be a fun little challenge for the long weekend as we all submit our little attempts at a podcasting studio.
Yeah.
Is this going to stop me from building my space in Final Fantasy 14?
I mean, I think it's something that could probably be done in a small amount of time.
Fair. Like little 5x5s?
I mean, I don't think it has to be, but I do think it could be.
I'm doing a 5x5.
I think you've done a lot of 5x5 builds already, so that tracks.
I need to move this Sableye in somewhere.